This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years now, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind some landmark projects. 69 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Tightrope Media Systems has been around the digital signage business for 20 years. And if you've heard of the company, there's a decent chance you thought, like me, that it was a broadcast software company that also did a signage CMS. Turns out it was the other way around, and they started as a digital signage software company doing digital menu boards on old CRT screens for schools. The big driver was coming up with a dumbed-down application that people with more important things to do around a school could use. That early platform seemed to have another likely home with community broadcasters, which is how they found their way into that side of the business. These days, it's about 50-50 digital signage and broadcast. Tightrope is in Orlando this week for Infocom, and the big thing they're showing off is an integration that turns $150 Apple TV boxes into managed digital signage players. It's something that's only really been possible in the last few months, and Tightrope president Eric Henry fills me in on how that happened and the broader story of the company. Eric, thanks for jumping on this. Can you tell me a little bit, for people who maybe don't know much about Tightrope, what the company's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tightrope started 20 years ago, actually 1997, in the education space, creating basically digital menu boards on old CRT displays.
Oh, really?
And okay. Yeah, so that's a little bit of our pedigree. And so when you look at our solutions even today, you'll see that a lot of our approach has really been with the end user in mind. And so throughout Tightrope's history, we've really looked at creating products that really allow people who don't normally do this particular job the ability to create messages and get back to what they do on a daily basis. And so that's really, at a high level, who we are. Again, like I said, we've been around for 20 years, and we've had some pretty fun experiences and seen the ups and downs and the pretty rapid evolution of the signage industry itself.
So you knew right from very early stages that you needed to dumb this thing down.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the idea even of putting messages on a computer to then push out to a TV was pretty revolutionary 20 years ago, and very few people were doing it. And actually, one of the founders of the company was working technical support at a dealership, and he was inspired to start the company because he was getting so many calls from teachers and folks just trying to do very simple things within digital signage. And it wasn't even called digital signage back then. It was called video bulletin boards.
Yep.
And so, yeah, so that was what sparked this whole desire to create software that was simple for everyday people.
Okay. So when I've seen Tightrope at trade shows, I've seen you at DSC, I've seen you at Infocom, I've seen you at NAB, I kind of made the assumption that you were a broadcast software company that found its way into digital signage because it was kind of a natural offshoot and easy to do because you'd already written the complicated stuff. But I've actually got it in reverse. You were a digital signage company that found your way into broadcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So we applied the same thinking to community broadcast. So again, not the big call letter broadcast stations. And
yeah,
along with the education space where they were doing media retrieval, so they'd have VCR decks back at the head end and playing back their content, naturally lent to the building of eventually video servers. And so building video servers and building software, again, for people who aren't necessarily classically trained or formally trained in running a broadcast automation station. We built software and tools around how do you make a television station happen for mainly community and education-based channels. And the two products actually came together because when television stations playing that content, there's a gap between shows. Carousel, our digital signage product, would actually generate the what's coming on next and pulling content and creating basically the filler content within our broadcast product. So they actually ended up working together pretty well, but certainly we did start as a digital signage company.
Hmm. And are those two mediums, so to speak, converging now?
It's interesting because I don't know. In some ways they are. The idea of a channel definitely is converging in a way, but also linear channel playback is changing quite a bit. And so you're seeing much more of a move towards the cloud, nonlinear video on demand type of things within the content playback side of things. So traditional broadcast, I think, is becoming a less expensive, less complicated thing to achieve. And we're seeing more and more movement to online distribution of content, even for community city council meetings and those types of things. But linear playback is definitely still its own market. And digital signage is alongside it, but I don't know that I would make the statement that they're converging, maybe even as rapidly as I was expecting them to.
Mm-hmm. Even with all the web services technology that's out there now that, you know, supports multiple types of screens.
Yeah, I think there is definitely maybe even a fundamental break between our customer bases and what they're trying to accomplish. So it's not necessarily that the technology is keeping us from converging. It's that oftentimes we find the digital signage within, let's say, an educational environment or a corporate environment or even a retail environment is taking a set of information and presenting it in a particular way on a screen. So we may be consuming RSS feeds and weather and informing an audience that is within a facility. So that's often the purpose of digital signage. Whereas in our community broadcast, it is capturing the city council meetings and things that are happening within the community or the football game or those types of things and conveying that to an audience that's at home. So whether it be delivered through the cable station or through a set-top box or online, the nature of who's consuming it when sort of dictates a little bit of a separation between the two, even though the technology platforms may be converging themselves.
Hmm. Do you have separate sales teams and development teams kind of working on the different tracks, or have you got people who are selling both stuff and just like whatever comes up that day?
We have dedicated salespeople for each product, mm-hmm. but they are actually cross-trained pretty well within the products. So on the sales side of things, we have one sales organization. Each sales rep would have their own focus in particular. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the sales team's structured. On the engineering side of things, we have one large engineering team that is cross-trained across our products. And if we need somebody who's a UI specialist or known really well for the kind of the user experience mm-hmm. types of things and the web front end, we'll leverage them depending on what needs to be invested into each product. We have some pretty talented hardware engineers and testing people. So we'll move them around to develop the products based on what business drivers and customer needs are happening. Right. So it's still one development team.
Is there a customer base, the digital signage side or the broadcast side, that's needier, that demands more of your time and needs more changes?
That's a great question. Who did you say listens to this podcast? Because that might dictate my answer.
None of your customers, I'm sure.
Right. So within the what we call the PEG market, the kind of the educational government access television stations, mm-hmm. the word needier is probably more of a descriptor of that market because they are the most resource constrained. And so typically our broadcast customers, they're making a buying decision that they are going to have to use this equipment for many years. Mm-hmm. And they often are not very well supported in terms of the technical resources even within their television station. And so we're pretty careful. So I would, you know, characterize them as more needy, but not the negative connotation of needy.
Right.
But just because of the reality of the world that they're in. And so we're pretty mindful of trying to deliver a lot of value to that customer that they can sustain for a long time. So that server's got to run. And if they have a problem and they're off air, they've got to have access to support. So that's why we've offered lifetime free support for those customers. And they're very high touch for sure. And so we try to be very attentive to what they need to get their job done. And they often don't have other resources. And so that I would say that that definitely requires a lot of special attention.
Okay. Yeah. And I was actually, good answer. I was actually more concerned or curious about which of the two verticals is changing more and therefore requires a lot of dev work just because the circumstances are changing, you know, because of media streaming or whatever.
Yeah. I would say that the digital signage industry is changing much, much more rapidly than the broadcast industry. There are things within broadcast that are changing, and we definitely want to meet the needs of our customers there. So just real quickly on that one, in the broadcast space, we're seeing much more of a move towards social media integration and delivering metrics around how many times shows are viewed and all the video on demand types of things and delivering the set-top boxes. But that's a relatively controlled, known problem to solve from a development perspective. The digital signage industry is continuing to change because the size of the deployments is getting much larger, the demands of the customers, where the screens are placed, the types of data that's integrated, the types of metrics that are needed to validate that the system's performing the way it is, the ways that you need to administer a large system versus a small system are very different. And then with some of the desires even that we've had that have led us to partnerships like BrightSign and with Apple TV deployments in terms of placing signage even in classrooms or in conference rooms. And those types of things have introduced a whole new set of development challenges.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the business itself, how does it split out? Is it like 50-50 your PEG clients and 50-50 digital signage, or is it like 70-30?
It's nearly 50-50. Broadcast was a little bit stronger than signage last year. This year, signage is trending a little stronger than broadcast. We anticipate there to be a fairly sharp divide in the next few years, where we're seeing a steady, modest growth within the broadcast business for us, just given the nature of the marketplace, and pretty significant growth in the digital signage space, given our partnerships, our product offering, and just the evolution of the market and the opportunity that still exists out there.
Is that why you guys are at DSC this year? Because I'm not sure you're always there.
We've been at DSC the last, since I returned in 2013, we've exhibited at DSC.
Okay.
Yep. And prior to that, we had not for a few years. So the interesting thing about DSC, the reason we hadn't historically exhibited there was actually that we viewed that as an end user show. And in our thinking, an end user show, we were very much targeted towards the dealer channel. And so we worked pretty exclusively with integrators / dealers over our history. And so we thought, we should just focus on the shows where dealers show up.
Yeah.
The reality is that DSE was a very strong end user show, which eventually filtered back to our dealers. And so neglecting that show hurt us in terms of offering and making ourselves known to the end users who are ultimately making the buying decision. And so that's why we started attending DSC and have found some really nice value out of attending that show the last several years.
Hmm. And you're at InfoComm this year. I assume you've been going to InfoComm for a bunch of years.
Absolutely. Yep.
And what's going to be new there this year?
So the big thing at InfoComm, there's two main talking points at InfoComm. One is Apple TV support. And so that's a pretty big move for us. So we've been working on that, and it is not officially shipping, but it is fully functional and it's been tested. And so we'll actually be showing live working Apple TVs playing Carousel Digital Signage at the show. So that's a big push for us, as well as we've expanded our support on the BrightSign hardware offering side to include all of their media player endpoints. And so now, for very low cost of entry, you can get into a BrightSign deployed network of signage players, whether it's their LS series to their OPS units that you can put in an NEC display or other manufacturer's display, all the way to their fully integrated roadster card that they put into, let's say, an Avenue all-in-one display for placing outside of patient rooms or outside of conference rooms for room scheduling and that type of thing. So those are the two big announcements for us. We did announce Carousel 7, and we're shipping that earlier this year. And so that will be on display. A lot of people haven't experienced Carousel 7 yet if they weren't at DSC or NAB. So that would be new to those who haven't.
And that's your content management system.
Yes, correct. That is our software.
So were you historically a PC-based company? Like, were you doing most of your installations just running off of some kind of an x86 box?
Yep, absolutely. And so that was, so we had always lived in the Windows world until our partnership with BrightSign. So we did have a little bit of we developed a Linux display engine several years ago with trying to get our player endpoint costs down. The Windows environment was okay for the corporate world. They were pretty accepting of the Windows boxes, but ultimately the price points were just too high, and pushing updates to them and operating systems and those types of things just weren't really that helpful. And with the growth and the strength of BrightSign emerging really as the industry leader in the endpoint side of things, mm-hmm. Partnering with them was really what changed our game away from PCs. While we still sell the PC platform to those who prefer it, we've seen tremendous growth in our BrightSign partnership.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
So if you've had BrightSign, you know, great boxes, nice price range of things, you can get good box at a pretty low price. Why did you need to also get something working on an Apple TV box, which is what, $150?
Yep. Yeah. So it's not so much a price point decision for Apple TV. It really is a different customer need. And so with BrightSign, the traditional signage placements that we would have, whether it be in common areas or outside of rooms and those types of things, is a very solid solution. If it's a retail environment, for sure, the way that BrightSign plays back video and all the things we can do with those boxes, outstanding. The problem that we were really trying to address with Apple TV is in-room signage is probably the best way I can describe that. And in-room signage in an educational environment, so let's take a K-12 middle school. So we sell quite a few boxes in education, and oftentimes on bid specs over the last several years, I would see the desire to be able to display content within the classroom as well as emergency notifications. And when you look at that ecosystem and what schools have budgeted for in-classroom technology, there's not a lot, especially when you multiply that times 100 classrooms, 200 classrooms, or a couple thousand classrooms across a district. And the other requirement, given where education is going with the idea of bring your own device, where every kid in the class has an Apple TV an iPad, and being able to share up to AirPlay, that was the other requirement. With that, when I would talk with industry consultants or school districts or superintendents, what they really wanted was the ability to be able to sit down in the classroom. When I get to class, I can look up at the screen and I can see everything that's happening within the school, see what the upcoming events are, maybe a special message from the teacher. And as we get rolling with class, teacher might AirPlay from their laptop or from their iPad up to the screen. And throughout class, they can share their, students can share their work from their iPad and that type of thing. And what's awesome, and the reason why we partnered with Jamf on this whole situation, is because Apple has now made it possible to manage all of their devices centrally, can actually turn off AirPlay by the sending of an emergency notification and take over the screen. Mm-hmm. And so even if the teacher's teaching, we can deliver an emergency message, we can deliver the morning announcements via live stream or whatever else they want to message throughout the school. And that's a pretty powerful feature within the classroom. So what ends up being is it's not so much about the $150 Apple TV. It may be that the district has already decided that they are an Apple district and they're going to put Apple TVs in those classrooms already. So now it's just a decision of, do I want to take that Apple TV and add some more power and capability to it mm-hmm. through a software license and putting an app on it? And so that's really the decision point for most of those customers. It's not really BrightSign versus Apple. It's more, yes, we're an Apple school district. We're already using iPads. We've made this investment. Hey, we'd like to do digital signage as well. And so I don't see them overlapping very much. Okay. Certainly there will be some overlap, but BrightSign's LS unit's only $250. And so there really isn't, and you don't have to pay any management fees to manage those devices mm-hmm. centrally. So they're pretty comparable. They're just going to be about making sure the customer has the right tool for what they need.
Apple is kind of legendary for being a challenge to work with if you want to take an Apple device and do something else with it. Was the fact that you're already working with this device management company is Jamf, right?
Correct.
Was that kind of the door that got open for you to make it possible to do this?
Yes. Yes. And so Jamf, they're in the same markets that we're in. They have a rich history of managing Mac devices and iOS devices within schools and corporate environments and banking and other environments. And so they really were the ones that helped us navigate and understand even that Apple was making the move to managing tvOS devices. So the Apple TV being their tvOS platform. Until 3-4 months ago, this wasn't even a possibility. So when Apple introduced the ability to control tvOS devices centrally and manage them centrally, that really was what changed the game and changed our thinking in terms of even looking at the Apple TV device. And so Jamf helped us navigate that. And the reality is once you understand how Apple would like you to work within their system, the development itself was remarkably quick. We started this project 3 months ago, basically. And our engineering team was able to get it all the way to the point where now we actually have an app that's been reviewed and out to the App Store, and we've deployed it on Apple TV devices and sent it to some of the top dealers in the United States to evaluate within a very short amount of time, shorter than we've ever experienced, using the Apple tool set, using our relationship with Jamf and them helping us navigate all of those steps has been actually quite a remarkably enjoyable experience, which is the opposite of what you've probably heard traditionally.
Right. Now, if I'm another software company, I'm listening to this and thinking, oh, now it's easy to work with an Apple TV. I should do that too. I assume that, as I said before, the critical thing is having that relationship with a company that already does device management on these things versus just all of a sudden you can, you know, go to the Apple store and pick up an Apple TV box and start developing to it.
Sure. It really depends on how you're positioning the Apple TVs and what the value add is. It's not that we're the only people that have ever done some form of digital signage on an Apple TV. It's that we're saying we're going to take an enterprise level digital signage CMS platform that has been developed and matured over 20 years and leverage the deployment of a partner like Jamf, where a school district that needs to deploy 1,000 of these is certainly not going to want to take the Apple TV remote, log in with an Apple ID, and do all the individual configuration and get signage running on the box. And so our enterprise software and the management, all the content management, ease of use things that we believe teachers in a classroom can pick up and just use, combined with the ability for us to create one configuration profile and give the IT team the ability to deploy 1,000, 2,000, or 3,000 of these things with one setup. So they have to do the work one time, and then the other 2,000 units, if they're bought through their corporate account and associated with their Jamf relation or instance, they're literally plugging 2,000 Apple TVs in, and they're all going and getting registered, downloading the app, and coming online, even with Wi-Fi configurations that they need. And so that's really, for us, that's our position in the market, is we want to position Apple TV where there's large enterprise deployments where you need to centrally manage these devices, push firmware updates to them, all of those types of value adds. There may be other companies that want to build things and just sell it through the App Store for very small installations, and they can certainly do that. We're targeting the larger ones. Eventually, I imagine there's some things we're going to do development-wise to make it appealing and easy for smaller customers to then use an Apple TV for signage, but that's not our focus at the moment. We want to execute large deployments really well and make sure we give our dealers and our end users and all the IT teams the tools they have to make it happen smoothly. Because they certainly don't... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just curious. Would this... I'm sure you guys have thought this through. Does this in any way cannibalize some of the work you already do with schools by introducing this?
I don't think so. No. I don't think so. I think it definitely... There are a lot of school districts right now that I'm talking to on the piloting side of Apple TV that will say, hey, we have 10 displays throughout our facility right now using your carousel product. How can we push this to more places, including the classroom? And so I think it's going to be much more of an augmentation of okay. of our existing business than cannibalizing anything. And what that also allows us to do is continually get more aggressive on our price points. We're not racing to the bottom in terms of what our software costs, but certainly as deployments get larger and more endpoints exist, we can continue to be more competitive and add more value to mm-hmm. customers. And I think that's appealing across all of our markets.
Do you guys do software as a service, or is it an enterprise license you buy it and pay for support?
It is an enterprise license that you buy. So right now we do offer perpetual and subscription-based offerings depending on how you'd like to purchase our product. Vast majority of our customers still participate with the enterprise purchase and go forward. And they get free support for the life of the product. And so most customers have opted for that method. We do offer subscriptions, but we don't necessarily have the SaaS offering that we want to have right. long term. And so we're in the midst of developing some new SaaS offerings as well.
Does that have a lot to do with the profile of the typical customer, where they're annually budgeted or whatever, and that's just how they need to buy things as opposed to being able to pay for something monthly?
Yes. Yeah, so historically, most of our customers would need to purchase their signage system out of a capital expenditure.
Right.
And so if they're doing a capital expenditure or it's a bid spec, they want to know what their all-in cost is. And in the last several years, the introduction of even the Google Apps platform within education has changed the mindset a bit, where they're willing to pay annually for things. And even as Microsoft has gone that way, as Adobe has gone that way, there definitely is a move towards paying for your software over time. The interesting thing that I'm seeing is while that is the model going forward, it's definitely a struggle for some of our end users to make that shift. They feel like they're continually paying for their signage software over and over again if they can't just buy it now. Even if it's much less expensive, obviously, on an annual subscription basis, it's going to be, a fourth or a fifth of what a perpetual license is. But there still seems to be a group of people that would really like to just buy it and know that they're done. And then if they really want to take a release 2 years from now, they want to just make that decision 2 years from now. And so we'll work with that customer that way, and then we'll build a subscription model that works well for the people that would like to just pay for it over time.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about one of the things you guys offer, design services. Is that a big part of your company, or just something that you have?
It is Are you talking big in terms of personnel or importance?
Well, I think both, really.
There's
lots of software companies that have maybe one or two people on staff that can do some creative in a pinch or whatever. But, you know, you guys kind of have this front and center up with, you know, and you list products and you say you've got Carousel and you've got design services.
Yeah, absolutely. So really the design services fit, I wouldn't say that they're key to our revenue strategy in themselves. Mm-hmm. And so our design services are not, yes, it's going to be this multi-million dollar revenue generating thing, standalone business. What it really is our desire is to make sure that our dealers are successful and our end users are successful. And what that often means, because either they don't have the design staff within their company or their team does just not have the capacity to take on a digital signage design project, they would like a third party that knows what they're doing. And so oftentimes I don't associate directly the revenue of what that team contributes to the bottom line, but it is being able to say yes to the customer and being able to solve their problem. So whether it's a interactive wayfinding project or a really well-designed channel or a video wall that needs to be compelling in the front office, having our creative team, whether it's working in conjunction with the dealer or with the end user on the design, coaching them on it or doing the full thing, it's an important part of our business because it ultimately leads to the customer being successful and happy. And so there's probably a much bigger dollar amount I put on that in my brain than would show up on the profit and loss statement.
Right.
And so that's really why we run that design business. And certainly it is a profitable business for us, but it is not a driver of the business in itself. It facilitates all of the other business that happens.
Right. Now we're talking by Skype from your new offices in Minneapolis.
Yes, absolutely.
What prompted the move? Is that just a reflection of things are going well and you need to relocate from St. Paul?
Yeah, things are going well. In our St. Paul location, it had a different dynamic to it in terms of even how the office was architected. We had a couple thousand square foot warehouse where we historically were doing a lot more production of our own equipment. That production operation has gotten much smaller given our focus on our BrightSign relationship and even partnering on the building of the PCs that we do on the Carousel side of the business. And so we didn't really need all that warehouse space. We are a growing company. We are a pretty dynamic workforce in terms of people in New York and Canada and North Carolina and LA. And so our team is spread out quite a bit. And we like to get together in Minneapolis. Jamf, our partners in downtown Minneapolis.
Okay.
And a beautiful, beautiful location opened up that is open architecture with lots of breakout huddle rooms. And so just shifting to a style that fits our company culture going forward and our partnerships and all that type of stuff and just being in a vibrant downtown location with public transit, all that stuff. So it all came together and equaled us moving to Minneapolis.
And how many people are in total with the company?
I believe we have 37.
Okay.
We may have 38, depends on how you count. So that's us.
And just last question, this will run next week when Infocom starts up. Where will people find you on the Infocom floor? Yeah, I bet you don't know the booth number.
Oh, that's a great question. I'm pretty sure it's booth 831.
Look for the Tightrope Media sign, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a big sign. We have a brand new booth this year, which we did win the best booth award at NAB, which was a little shocking to us. So we're pretty excited about it. You cannot miss our booth. There's a huge 12-panel video wall, and it is the most asymmetrical, non-traditional booth that you will probably see at the show. And so black and yellow, Tightrope Media Systems, pretty sure it's booth number 831.
Okay. And was that the one you had at DSC, same booth?
It is a little bit bigger version of the same booth we had at DSC.
I thought that one was good. So hard to miss that.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 69 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.